hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island. It's Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
It is Cofield & Company, Hill & His Homies Edition. Adam Hill, Greg Salerno down here at the TI, the Golden Circle, as you just heard. Great spot. All the games, tons of TVs, the food, the drink. Great spot to hang out. And the most important thing, and we can't stress this enough, I forgot to say it last hour, free parking on the Strip.
Amazing.
What a dream.
Yeah, it really is.
What a dream.
I almost forget every time, and then I get excited again when I get here.
It's fantastic. It's so great. It's like the old days. Yeah. It's a real throwback property here at the TI, so come on down, check it out. Not a whole lot of spots on the Strip that you want to hang out now, I think, these days, but this is certainly one of them because of that nice perk that you got down here. And all the other great things going on at the TI. Well, I guess that just leaves us one thing. Let's jump into the Big Four.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
Mention Patrick Berber coming up later in the hour from down here at the TI. Get into some of the odds up on the sportsbook, because you can also bet here at the Golden Circle, which is the sportsbook at the TI, in addition to being a great sports bar. Well, how often do you sign up for things, Salerno, and just click the accept box and not even read what the terms and conditions are?
Every single time.
Maybe you should stop doing that.
I think so.
Maybe I should as well. Because of this story, It's almost hard to believe, and I wish we had Justin Watkins on today. We might even get into this again when we have him on next week to see just how much of a chance this suit has that is going on right now. But there's a gentleman named Jeffrey Piccolo. He's mourning and grieving the loss of his wife. She passed away very tragically. We don't know the details of the case, so we don't want to get too far into that, but she has severe allergies. She was at a Disney park. She succumbed to her allergies and passed away. There's a lawsuit going on between him as a widower and Disney. They say, oh, no, no, you cannot sue us. This has to be handled by an arbitrator. This can't go to court. And he says, well, why? I mean, what's going on here? This is the proper channel. You sue somebody when there's something like this happens. And the response from Disney is, oh, no, no. You agreed to arbitration with any dispute between yourself and Disney. Well, how's that possible? Well, several years ago, he had signed up for a one-month subscription to Disney Plus. And part of that subscription, when you click yes on the terms and conditions, is that any dispute between yourself and Disney will be handled by arbitration, not court. I don't think this is what they had in mind. And I have no idea the legalities, how this is going to play out, how this works at all. But it does certainly make for a sensational story and a sensational headline that a corporation would try to do something like this. And by the way, with so many corporations now buying so many things, and the entire world is basically just going to be three major companies.
Right.
If this works, this is going to happen a lot more.
It's honestly unbelievable. And the thing is, I believe that 1 month was a trial, too.
It was. A one-month trial.
He was just trying it out. Yeah, it's pretty insane. And I thought about that. As soon as I saw this story, I was thinking, because like you said, do you ever look at them? I can't imagine what's in the other ones we've already signed. Like, you know,
what
social media and like all these other ones. I mean, what's in there? Who knows? They could probably do literally anything to us. We wouldn't be able to do anything about it at this point.
I mean, it seems like it. And like I said, hope. I don't know who's right, who's wrong. We don't know any of the facts of the case. I just feel like on the surface, this needs to be heard in court and not via an arbitrator. And I hope that these kind of things don't hold in the future.
Yeah,
that we can never deal with anything because of how that played out.
You know what kind of reminds me of? You ever see that movie with Matt Damon called The Rainmaker, where he's like a lawyer and it's like a huge corporation versus some lady or something?
It's something that can actually happen?
Well, it was like an insurance thing, and they were trying to find like any kind of technicality to where they could, you know, not have to pay the thing. And there was a lot of things like that in there, like, oh, well, she agreed to this, this happened, blah, 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 throughout the entire movie. And it's kind of reminded me of that. Now, the good part is, at the end, the corporation lost. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it.
So it's not something that can happen in real life.
Maybe not.
As you know, I only see things. I only see movies that can happen in real life. A corporation losing a court battle could not happen. That's a sci-fi movie.
It was a fantasy. Fantasy, I think, is the genre. So
there's no chance.
Yeah.
Number three. I don't think I say number three, right? Don't I just wait till number three?
I usually point, but he can't see you.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like I'm just saying the same thing that the voice is going to say.
You guys are perfectly bad saying number three, number two, number one. It's all good.
Kind of defeats the purpose.
I know. I do the same thing.
But so, yes, we are at number three. I am not a Notre Dame fan. In fact, I have a little battle going with Michael Mayer, former Notre Dame player who plays for the Raiders, who is not a fan of when I wear Michigan shirts and hats to practice. Today I got the Detroit Red Wings shirt on, so he probably wouldn't love this either. So I'm not a huge Notre Dame guy, but this seems a bit excessive. The swimming program at Notre Dame has been basically banned for a year for gambling. And when you see this, you say, look, guys, we all know now. You can't be gambling on college sports when you're a college athlete. You really can't be gambling on any sports. We understand the rules. We know that everybody can do it now. We know that it's widespread, but it's regulated. You can't do it. But it's not really what they were doing.
No.
It was within the team. They would set numbers on each other's times and kind of bet over-unders between each other, which is basically what any kids do on any team anywhere.
Any human anywhere doing anything. Yeah.
Of course. Now, it does sound like it extended into, heaven forbid, an NCAA tournament pool. I don't think this is the intent of the gambling laws, the gambling regulations against college athletes. There needs to be some sort of, you know, understanding of the differences.
Yeah.
And it is a slippery slope, I get it. But this is a rough one. A year ban for the men's swimming team at Notre Dame, and it doesn't sound like a lot of it. Now, here's the other one that kind of gets to me. During the course of the investigation, obviously cell phones were seized and looked at. And it said there's a lot of horrific jokes and comments between the kids about events and things that are going on in society.
Right.
Yeah. That's called a group text.
I know. The whole thing is crazy. I don't understand it. First of all, I don't even understand how that's gambling if you're doing it amongst yourselves anyway. It's not officially gambling. No.
Well, I was careful today. I was doing another show, and the person wanted to. He said, "Let's bet $10," because I said UNLV would definitely be in a bowl game, and he said, "Let's bet." And I was like, "I'm not betting." I was like, "No, we can't do that. I know we can't do that. Like, that's not allowed. I'm just telling you my opinion is that they're going to be in a bowl game. If it's something you cover, you really can't do those sort of things. But I'm very careful about it. But I just think between friends and between teammates and stuff like that, like those things happen.
Wait, is that a law? You can't, is it like frowned upon, or you really can't do it?
Like, a little bit of both, depending on where. Like, obviously, from my job perspective, anything that I cover, I can't wager on.
Huh. Interesting.
For sure. I mean, that's just, you know, basic ethic stuff.
Well, that's what I mean. But is that like, because?
No, but I think that there would be a line that could potentially be crossed if I, and I don't know, I don't think it would be exactly legal, but I know the, you know, there could be repercussions legally if I say saw, like, I was going to say a player's name, a player that was very important to the point spread get injured.
Oh, I see.
And then made the bet, like I'm standing on the field watching practice, and I make the bet before
everybody else
knows about it. Like, there is some legal gray area there for sure.
Yeah.
But that's part of why you can't do it and why I totally understand why you can't do it.
All right, that makes sense. Inside information.
Yeah. Number two?
Number two.
Thanks, Griffin. I'm going to be on top of that. We didn't talk about this earlier in the week, and it's not the hugest of deals, but I don't know how many people saw the Matt Kuchar story from the weekend. Sunday night, final round of the golf tournament. He was still out on the course, one of just about four players that were out there. It starts to get dark. The tournament officials are like, go ahead and finish the round, because it's Sunday night. It's the last day of the tournament. And he says, nah. He's got three shots left to hit on the 18th hole. He's in the fairway. He's like, nah, good. I'll come back tomorrow. Now, it sounds obnoxious, especially because now you've got to have tournament officials. You got to have workers. You got to have people come back the next day to finish out this tournament that was supposed to be done on Sunday. And that really sucks. Now, if he's in the hunt and it's very important. Like, yeah, I think you want the ultimate conditions, but he wasn't going to win the tournament. He says that there was a young player playing with him who did have a chance, and he wanted to set an example so the kid didn't have to be the only one that said, you know, basically, like, I don't want to be the jerk as the young guy that's like, hey, I want to wait till tomorrow and have a better chance. Kuchar was saying, I did it so that he would have an easier time. But the kid was like, no, I'll finish. So everybody finished except him.
Do you golf?
Is he a jerk?
I don't know. Do you
so
golf?
I did when I was younger. I stopped for a long time. I actually have played 2 rounds in the last month.
Yeah.
Trying to think about maybe getting back. But I would say, but the question, no, I'm not a golfer.
Well, the reason I ask is, like, would it matter if it was darker out? Because, I mean, you're kind of just hitting in a direction, right?
Well, not if you're a professional player.
That's what I mean.
Yes, if me or you are out there, who cares?
Right.
If you're a professional player playing for, like, $1 million, it does matter. And he did have to finish the round to move up in the FedEx Cup points in order to have a chance of qualifying for the end of the year stuff. So he did have to finish.
Right.
But he probably could have played just the same in the slight darkness. It's more about the... Are you a jerk for making everybody come back the next day?
Kind of.
Yeah, kind of. Kind of. You're just not a jerk? Griffin.
Number one.
See?
He did it.
It was a signal. Yeah. He got it. He picked up. He's
still a little
guy.
Slow on it, though.
It's fine. I think you got it. It was a tricky one. We'll get into this a little bit more on the other side, but we're going to set this up. Griffin was able to have a conversation with Dan Hooker, who is a very interesting guy who is fighting... back in his part of the world, UFC is down under, coming up this week. A big, big event. A lot to get into. A lot of ramifications. A lot of, you know, I know people don't like to mix politics and sports, but it's impossible to do in this main event. You have to mix those things because that's very much part of the storyline. But a lot of great fights as well, in addition to just the big title fight. Griffin was able to talk to Dan Hooker, but I know he's excited. Griffin's always excited about UFC. I'm at the point where I usually am for a couple fights here and there. But has this card even, like, raised your antenna this week? Are you into this at all?
A little bit. I have to admit, you brought this up already, the politics part of some of the UFC stuff kind of, like, turns me away a little, honestly, when I read some of the stuff they say to each other or whatever. It's kind of, like, unbelievable to me.
We don't even have to get into the details of it. I actually said I didn't think they should make this fight because the political stuff is not, like, it's not left versus right.
Yeah, right, of course.
If it's like, hey, Trump supporter versus non-Trump supporter,
right.
Like, okay, that's fine. That's kind of fun and games. Like, this is real. There's a very deep-seated history of a lot of things back and forth in this fight that are very disturbing. I didn't think they should do it for that reason. So far, it's been okay. There hasn't been any, like, real violence outside the cage, anything like that. But I was uncomfortable with the entire booking of the fight as it was. I'm excited to see how it turns out. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting fight card this week, including the fight with Dan Hooker. And we'll hear from him, see how Griffin did talking to him on the other side. We'll get to evaluate his interview a little bit. That's coming up next as we continue Cofield & Company through Golden Circle at TI.
Now back to Cofield & Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Sports Reno.
This is Cofield & Company, Hill & His Homies edition down here at the Golden Circle, TI. Big fight weekend. Don't forget, you can check out so many sporting events down here at the Golden Circle. TVs everywhere. The sportsbook's in here. You can place wagers on the fights coming up this weekend. We'll get into a little bit of the main event and some of the controversies going on there between the two fighters, why it is such a high-tension situation here in the main event. But we did get to hear from Dan Hooker. Griffin was able to catch up with him. And, Griffin, I'm excited to hear what you guys talked about.
Yeah, Dan Hooker, he is definitely a UFC fan's favorite fighter. That was obvious from his last fight with Jalen Turner at UFC 290. And that's kind of where we started the interview. I checked in with Dan on how he was feeling after that pretty great performance against Turner and how he was dealing with the injury following it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I pretty much like fully healed it, rebooked another fight with the Bobby Green fight, and then it was rebroken. So I have got a pretty much a full training camp in during that time. and just spend a lot of time working. Like, it's, you can't stop training every time you get hurt or sick or anything like that. You just learn to work around it. So a lot of jabbing, my friend, a lot of jujitsu, my friend, and we're back to 100%.
I love to hear it. You are one of the fan favorites of the UFC, the Hangman. Everybody knows you. Everybody loves you. Talking about that injury you received, and then obviously you got injured again after the Jalen Turner fight with that same broken arm. How do you mentally recover from that when it comes to just having trust in your body and trusting when you get back into training and even back into the octagon? How do you kind of reassure yourself that, you know, the body's going to hold up and you're not going to have any type of slip up or re-injury?
Oh man, this is, I've been fighting professionally since I was 19 years old. I'm 34 now and I've been pretty good. Touch wood. I need to find some wood. Touch wood. I've been pretty good. To think that you're going to be a professional cage fighter for 15 years and not have any kind of bumps and bruises and injuries and surgeries, like, that's not my first time under the knife, and I can take it to the bank that that's not my last time under the knife. Like, it's just part and parcel of the sport. So when you're, you know, when you play with fire for a living and you get burnt, I'm not going to sit home and cry about it. Like, you just get it fixed and get back out there. So it's more of like a pragmatic way of looking at things as opposed to getting too down on myself. It's part and parcel of being a cage fighter.
We are again joined by Dan Hooker here on ESPN Las Vegas. Be sure to catch the pay-per-view on Saturday for UFC 305. So before you broke your arm in training following the Jalen Turner fight, there were plans in place for you to fight King Green, formerly Bobby Green, at a UFC fight night. But now, since the injury, we saw King Green go in and he got to fight Paddy Pimblett. And now you are here set up to fight the fifth-ranked lightweight in the UFC with a lot of implications on the line. Do you kind of feel like you're in a better spot now than you were originally before the injury?
1,000%. Like, the Bobby Green one would have been for money and for fun. Like, but in terms of climbing the rankings and putting yourself in the title picture, it's not a fight that would have done it. That's just a fight that got me up, got me excited, and would have got me back to work. But this fight is a fight that puts you back in the mix. You know, this division's in a funny place at the moment. Arman's booked for the title. He's the next in line to fight Islam for the belt. And then, besides that, the next guy on a win streak is Gamrot in the top five. So you take his position, you put yourself as the next guy in line on a win streak in that top five.
Of course, who's Gamrot? He's coming in, as you said, he is the number fifth ranked lightweight in the UFC lightweight division. He has a record of 24 wins, 2 losses, 1 no contest. He's definitely a force right now, I believe, in this division. You said beforehand leading up to this fight that one thing you're really looking for is to take away that fifth ranked ranking. He's come out and he said that he's looking to push the envelope and push himself into a position to fight for the interim title against Armin Tsarukyan once he does return from his suspension. Do you believe that if you were to get the win on Saturday night, do you see yourself being in that similar position where you and possibly Armin Tsarukyan are fighting for the interim title?
Oh, man, I'll take whatever fight that gets me the most money, brother. I get pay-per-view points for an interim title. I get pay-per-view points for a real title. I get pay-per-view points for a BMF title. And he'd get a shit ton of money for fighting Conor McGregor. So either one of those options, I leave with a pocket full of cash. And so you will see me put the gloves on and swing.
That's why we love Dan the Hangman Hooker. He is just a fighter's fighter. You will, speaking of Gamrot, you know, Gamrot obviously has a very heavy wrestling background. And of course, throughout your career, you face some of the best wrestlers in the world of MMA. Do you see anything different in Gamrot's style that you've prepped for in training camp that he kind of differentiates from previous wrestlers you faced? Or has it kind of been just the same preparation?
Well, like, the only time I've ever been, like, out-grappled was the Islam Makhachev fight, and that was our country was in COVID lockdown, and I got stuck in Las Vegas for the last few weeks of training and kind of just put a training camp together out of thin air, really. So it was, like, a funny position. But in terms of, besides that, no one has been able to really hold me on the ground and out grapple me. So I'm excited to get out there and just show my true skill set when I'm surrounded by my coaches and by my team. And when I've prepared properly, that's when you can truly showcase your skills.
Next question I have for you. So obviously, like we said, there's a lot of implications here on the line for both of you guys. There's a lot of opportunity going forward. How important is it at this stage of your career to be getting opportunities to fight for the belt and to ultimately be a UFC champion?
Yeah, like that's just through experience. That's like the aspect of the sport which I like the least is like the timing. But you follow the elite level of the division for long enough and the champions of the division for long enough, you realize that all the guys holding the belt have great timing. Like they fight when everything's in their favor. They fight at the right time. They fight. Then the guys like Bobby Green and the guys like Cowboy and stuff like that, who just get out there, fight anyone, anytime, and they don't kind of respect that timing that their champions kind of do. They miss out on a lot of opportunities. So it's, like balancing the two, like holding my instinct back, which is just to fight anyone, anywhere, and then also taking the right time, picking the right fights that move you closer to the belt. So it's like having a combination and being more of a cerebral in the matchmaking room, I guess.
So you got booked onto this card kind of late. We saw your training partner, friend Israel Adesanya, who will be fighting in the main event Saturday night. He pushed for you to be on this card. You have come out and said that it was important for you to be able to fight on this card in your home country. And then obviously we got Israel Adesanya, we have you, we have Kai Kara France. What does it mean to be on this card going down Saturday night, fighting on the same card with your training partners, with guys that you consider really close with, and to just be doing it all while being in front of your home crowd?
Yeah, well, like, I've been in the UFC for 10 years. Like, I know that all of that stuff fades away. Like, what number the guy was, who you were fighting, all of this stuff kind of fades to the back. And when it's all said and done, you're going to remember it for the moments in time. I'm going to remember it for this fight week, when you're surrounded by all your teammates, when we're there and all our friends are there, all our families there supporting us, and we're just surrounded by our team. Like, those are the moments that are going to go down that you're going to truly remember over time. That's why I wanted to be a part of this card so much, so I didn't miss out on being in this environment and being surrounded by all of these special moments.
You famously have just inked up really hard. You got so many more tattoos. A lot of fans have noticed the amount of tattoos you've been getting.
Pretty hard to miss.
Pretty hard to miss. They're good looking. You got good looking art, man. They're really good pieces. I would just simply want to ask, you have the leg tattoos, obviously. You have the chest piece. You have the back tattoo. Which one of those tattoos hurt the most to get put on?
Oh, I'd say your feet, brother. Your feet and your ankles. I reckon that's right up there. Not many guys have got their feet done.
Really? Oh, I can't. Yeah. The feet is awful. I've had a couple tattoos myself, and the forearm, in my opinion, was the worst. But, you know, the amount that you have, they look so good that I personally want to start getting some tattoos in those areas. But they're also like, I don't know if I'm tough enough to take it.
They're not the most fun, mate. They hurt and they're expensive.
Yeah, but they look sharp. I'll give you that. Hey, Dan, thank you again for joining us. Again, this has been Dan, the Hangman Hooker. Make sure to catch him this Saturday fighting at UFC 305 in Australia. Be sure to buy the pay-per-views. Do not miss this card. It is wound up to be one of the best of the year. Dan, thank you again. We appreciate your time.
No trouble. Thank you very much.
Dan Hooker and Griffin. What a combo. I think you guys are friends now.
I like to think so.
I think that's true. Now, I'm going to take his word for it on the foot tattoos. No chance I would ever do that.
What's the point anyway? You're usually wearing shoes.
Not if you're Australian or New Zealand.
Yeah, I guess
Zealand.
You're right. Yeah, I guess so.
And you're just walking around with
Crocodile shoes. Dundee.
Hey, you got sandals on all
yeah,
the time.
It's true.
I think that's fine. But Griffin, biggest takeaway for you from what Dan Hooker had to say about his matchup this week?
He just seemed very ready. He seemed to understand just how much he has to gain in a win on Saturday night. But he also seemed like he understood that, you know, at this point of his career, he appreciates the moments, like he said, being able to be on a card with his training partners slash friends and being able to fight and compete in his own home country. So he was a really humble guy, and it was a great time getting to talk to him.
There you go. UFC 305 tomorrow. Big one, Israel Adesanya. Drickus Duplessis, even if Dana White can't say his name, we can. Drickus Duplessis fighting against Israel Adesanya. Dan Hooker on the card as well. We'll continue. Keep things going here from the Golden Circle at the TI.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Back here, Cofield and Company. Paul Skeen just gave up a two-run homer. That's breaking news. That rarely happens. Like, never gives up a run. Mariners 2-0 over the Pirates. That's one of many games you can watch down here at the Golden Circle. At the TI, hopefully hear from Patrick Berbert in a couple of minutes here. Find out who people are betting in baseball today. More importantly, not more importantly, but I think of more interest to many people, what's going on in the football betting world as well. College just around the corner, NFL as well, preseason all over the place right now coming up. People are mad. People are always mad about something. There's every day there's something to get outraged about and furious about, and last night, it was the fact that Haley Welch threw out the first pitch at the Mets game. But do you know who she is?
Hawktua girl.
Okay. I thought maybe it would stump you, but yes. She is enjoying her 15 days of fame?
I guess,
it's supposed
yeah.
to be 15 minutes, I guess. It's 15 days.
Right.
You know what? Let her. Like, look. She seems like a – all jokes aside about how she got to this point or whatever – she just seems like a very sweet girl from the country.
Yeah.
She's, I mean, I guess we get, like, she doesn't seem particularly smart or savvy. Like, I don't think she planned this out. I don't think it was some grand conspiracy to try to get famous.
Yeah.
With some goofy video on the internet. She has her moment. Like, let her enjoy it. Yesterday, she threw out the first pitch. She threw a spitball. That's kind of funny. She
yeah,
spit on it and
funny.
Pitched it. Like,
yeah.
good for her.
I was
people
wondering.
People are so mad.
I was wondering, yeah, people get mad about everything, but I was mad. I was wondering,
don't ruin baseball, my precious baseball.
I know, so stupid.
She's still got a first pitch.
You've thrown out a first pitch before.
I have not.
You have not ever?
I have not.
Oh, well.
Nobody wants me to do it.
Well, I've done
it. I don't, unlike you, I don't like making things about me.
That's true. But when I was making things about me and I did throw out the first pitch, they announce you as something. You
sure.
know, like, hey, Greg,
sure.
from Cotton 92. What do they announce her as?
Hawktua girl.
Is that what they said?
No.
What do they say?
So here's the thing. That actually is the real point of this, that people are big mad about this. She actually was representing a charity. She was trying to raise awareness for vets' dogs, which are, you know, actually, in side note, have you watched the documentary about Inside the Mind of Dogs on Netflix that just came out?
No.
It's about studying the mind of dogs.
Oh, I'm very interested in this.
And they use a lot of service dogs as kind of like they show you how they studied them, how they figured things out. They actually studied, because it used to be like, hey, here's a service dog.
Right.
And they figured out, like, no, this, like, if you actually put them through all this training, some of them work much better for people that are, you know, have PTSD that really need a calming influence.
Sure.
Some of them, if you have mobility issues, some of them are better at, like, turning light switches on and off, which is wild to watch.
That is crazy.
But like they figure out how best to match a dog with what people need, and they show you how they've learned how to study brains, which includes figuring out a way to make a dog sit still in an MRI long enough to scan their brain, which is wild.
That is crazy.
I thought it was a really cool documentary, but it's a similar charity, which is matching dogs to vets for their assistance. That's what she was representing. That's why she threw out the pitch. Get mad.
Yeah. Like, seriously. I mean, it never ceases to amaze me. The entire Olympics, people are getting mad about literally everything. Anytime a sports game's played, people are mad about everything. Now everybody's mad at Haley for becoming famous for Hawktua, you know, whatever. Who cares? If the end result is good, which what you're saying is good, who cares?
Yeah, and she made fun of herself. And again, I think she is probably aware that time's running out.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
I don't think she believes she's now famous forever.
Well, I know comedians are mad because now she's getting booked at clubs and stuff, but
All right, now I might have a problem. I'm much more a comedy purist than a baseball purist.
Did you watch her interview on the Bill Maher has like a podcast or whatever? Yeah. Is that a little weird?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't just me.
Yeah. Well, I think we know why Bill Maher booked her.
Yeah, of course. He was hoping that, you know, drinks in.
Exactly. You never know. All right, stop being mad at everything. Maybe we'll get mad at some numbers. Hopefully we'll catch up here with Patrick Berbert as we continue from the TI down here at the Golden Circle, the sportsbook right around the corner from us. Game.
Live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, risk supervisor at the Treasure Island Sportsbook, Patrick Berbert, joins Cofield and Company.
It is Cofield and Company, Hillness Homies Edition, down here at the Golden Circle at the TI. Patrick Berbert, as the big voice said, joins us now, as he does each and every Friday. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing wonderful. How about yourself?
I'm good. How can you not be good? We've got sports on everywhere, games on, TV all over the place, football around the corner. It's a great time of year.
Absolutely. I agree. We're revving up for football season coming up, so I'm really excited.
And this is the best spot for it to get your bets in and get the great TVs. They're just everywhere. No matter where you look, whatever angle, whatever seat you're at the table, there's a TV in your direction. It's great. So you don't have to be one of those guys that's sitting there turning around trying to look at a TV. You got them everywhere. So it's a perfect setup. And as we mentioned, we don't say it enough, the free parking's big. It's a big one down here. Before we get into some of the football and the baseball that's going on right now, I did want to touch on looking back a little bit. The Olympics just wrapped up. It kind of put a lot of our sports on hold. We didn't get WNBA for a while. Kind of baseball is pushed back. I know that there's not a whole lot of betting opportunities in the market, but how did that kind of go for you? How did people respond to some of the Olympic stuff that was up?
I think we did pretty well on it on here. We booked every day for basketball and the soccer here. And then we put up some future stuff for the tennis and the track and field events, mainly like the 100-meter dash.
The marquee.
Marquee events. Marquee stuff. And those were what really piqued people's interest, betting at the counter for us.
And a lot of those, well, there was a couple of events where there were some upsets, but a lot of favorites in the track really that came through. So, you know, it makes it a little less fun and a little less entertaining, I guess, for some people. But I thought there was a lot of great action that went on in the Olympics. And the big thing to me is that now the attention turns, obviously there's a Winter Games coming up, but attention turns to L.A. It's in this part of the country. It's in this part of the world. A lot of things are going to be live in prime time. A lot more interest usually takes place when it's in the U.S. Does that expand the opportunities for you guys to book even more stuff for the Olympics?
Absolutely, and I think it's even going to draw a big interest for bettors here, because a lot of bettors that come down to the Strip, especially our property, come from California. So with the Olympic Games going to be in L.A. in 2028, I think they're going to spend some time here and then also maybe want to go to L.A. and see some events going on over there or be in the sports book and watch them.
Yeah.
I really think you're going to see a lot more handle come across the counter for the 2028.
Yeah, Olympics. We talk about those marquee events. Some of them are going to be live, like at 8:30 at night, 9 o'clock at night for the, you know, for the 100. It's going to be great. Where it was, they showed it in prime time, but it was really taking place like noon in these games. So I think that could step it up. And here's something that a lot of people aren't talking about, but get ready, because we don't know what they're going to do yet. I know a lot of guys are pitching it. Flag football is coming to the Olympics in 2028. If that is NFL players, that's going to do some big numbers for you guys.
That will do big numbers, because as we know, NFL is the king of the sports book. That's what everybody wants to bet, the NFL. So if the NFL players were to participate in that, especially all the electric guys, like get the fast guys at wide receiver, like Tyreek Hill, good receivers like Justin Jefferson, then you got the electric quarterbacks like Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes doing all these acrobatic stuff out there in flag football. It would be really fun to watch.
UNLV coming up this season. For the first time since I've lived here, I'm actually like excited going into a season. There's sort of an afterthought. Most of the time I've been in Vegas. Is that showing in the betting? Are people excited about UNLV coming in?
Are we talking football here?
Oh, yeah, college football. I'm sorry. Yeah.
College football. Yeah. They have an electric wide receiver come back in Ricky White. So that's really the highlight of that offense that everybody's going to be eyes on, focused for, because he was in the running last year for the Blitnikoff Award, and he's going to be in it again this year. He's really good, so he's going to be must watch TV.
Yeah, UNLV coming up. Their opener, August 31st at Houston. Houston a slight favorite in that game. A little less than a field goal. I think 2.5. I think that might be where you guys are on that game right now. A big challenge for UNLV. I mean, it's on the road against a Big 12 school, but it's a winnable game. So that is going to add a lot of interest, I think, for this one.
Absolutely. And as far as power ratings go, I have Houston as the
worst team?
Least power rated team in the Big 12. And I actually make that game a pick, so I wouldn't be surprised if UNLV is able to sneak one out on the road there.
Anything you can do about the humidity? Because I'm going to be there, and I'm a little bit not happy about that. It seems like it's going to be hot and humid. I don't love that, especially like a 6 o'clock kickoff. It'll still be hot outside. That's not good. I don't like that.
Good luck with that humidity
Thanks.
Down there.
I appreciate that. I am intrigued also. I'm a Michigan fan. We talked about this. Michigan's going to be an interesting team early in the year from a power ratings or from a betting perspective. Obviously, I think the lowest ranked team that is a defending champion in a long time. They do have some talent, but there's a lot of questions about Harbaugh. How do you think the betting public is going to respond to Michigan this season?
I think to start off early, as long as they play well, their money's going to continue to roll in on Michigan. They beat Ohio State, 2 years in a row now? So, I mean, they're still reigning supreme right now in the Big Ten. It's theirs to lose. But as we know, Ohio State, they went out and attacked the transfer portal. They're pretty loaded top to bottom all over their roster. So I think Michigan's going to have some problems later on.
Nobody asked you about Ohio State, Patrick. We didn't have to bring that up. Okay, look, they spent a lot of money. We get it. They brought in a lot of talent. Money brings talent. That's good for them. Enjoy it. Enjoy all the – I was going to say enjoy the penalties, but there's no more penalties. You can do whatever you want. They spent a lot of money on that roster. They should win. Actually, as much as I hate them, credit to them. They saw what Michigan did. They got mad and said, okay, we're going to go spend the money. And they did, and I think they're going to be a fun team to watch and a tough team to beat. We talk about those games involving Michigan, and they're hosting Fresno State, a Mountain West team, to start their season on the 31st. But there actually is – like, that used to be week zero. Now there's, like, a week double zero. It starts next week, the 24th. The first games kick off, and we start with, you know, Florida State, Georgia Tech right up at the top of the schedule. Are people ready? Are the bettors, you think, ready to jump into this market already? I feel like Labor Day is when people are used to starting to bet on games.
It's really like you don't see too much of the sharp bettors hopping in this early. You get a lot of like the recreational bettors that are getting that football itch that didn't have it all off season and they're ready to come here and bet. But you will get a lot of people in here wanting to watch it just because they went all off season without it.
Talking to Patrick Berbert, he is the risk supervisor here at the Golden Circle Sportsbook at Treasure Island. Try the chicken salad; it's amazing. By the way, I think risk supervisor, it's a cool name. I think you need a better one, like a gambling czar or something. That sounds more like a loss prevention guy, like a retail store or something, you know, like they're going to catch you, but I don't know.
You don't understand the sports betting world. It's a thing. It's a real thing.
I know it is. I'm just saying that I think it would be cooler if he was gambling czar. So the Dodgers, obviously the MLB a little bit here, started off great, looked good. Are they going to blow this now?
I'm really curious because two of the hottest teams in baseball right now happen to be the Padres and the Diamondbacks. Are only two games back from them as of right at this moment. And the Diamondbacks, that they got Merrill Kelly back. They've got a lot of guys that are really playing well. Kettle Marte is playing at an MVP level. And then the Padres, their offense is doing really good. Their pitching has been really well. And as banged up as the Dodgers pitching staff has been this year, like, they're not pitching that bad because they're seventh in baseball in ERA. And that lineup, as we know, is loaded as could be. So it's going to be really interesting down the stretch. But the easiest of the schedules of those three teams happens to be the Padres. So it'll be really interesting to see if they're able to pull it off.
Who is, in your mind, who's the best team right now in baseball?
In baseball, not best record, but I really think I got to go with the Astros. I mean, they've just been lights out since they've had their
killing me.
I'm a Yankees fan, so I hate to say that. I hate to say that as well, but I mean, since they had their really horrendous start, there's been no team playing better than them.
You know who the best record in baseball is? The Cleveland Guardians. I don't think they're the best team, but they do have the best record, and that is, and I have to point it out, because that is the only future bet I made this year was Guardians over. I think I'm going to cash it this week.
Good for you.
Which is incredible. So I'm waiting that one out. I do have a little bit of more. I know I've brought this up a lot to a lot of people, and people are getting tired of me saying it. I have a lot of money on Emmanuel Clase to win the Cy Young that I bet early in the year. It is ridiculous how little hype he's getting.
Yeah, I think as dominant as he's been, I believe he has like a 0.49 ERA.
It's 0.65. If it was 0.49, I'd really be 0.65 and under 0.7 WHIP as well. Like, he's untouchable. He's given up one run in 2 months.
I think the thing that's holding him back as far as Cy Young voting is his strikeouts, because he's not up there where he's going to be able to reach 100 strikeouts. But yes, he's been dominant. You put him in the game to close out the game, you know you're getting the win.
My theory is that they need to be the number one seed. Like, I know it's not a team award, but if you are the best player on the one seed, they might find a way to reward you with something like that. And they're going to have Tariq Skubal probably get shut down or fall apart down the stretch. But I think that's the only way. He has to continue doing what he does, and they're going to have to be the one seed, because I do think that the voters are going to buy into that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Skubal's minus $6 right now.
He
if
is.
If you get a couple of bad starts from him down the stretch, that would help you as well.
I've got some at 300-1, 400-1. Just come on, give me that chance. It would be great if it comes through. Yankees, as you said, Yankees fan, and the Yankees just added another run on the road. It's not Skubal that gave it up, though. The Tigers are down 2-0. We talked earlier about this. I want to bring this up to you, sorry to spring it on you, but one of the worst rule proposals I've ever heard, Major League Baseball has kind of floated it out there that they might want to make it mandatory for starters to go six innings.
I was reading that rule yesterday, and there was like three exceptions to it. Is if they
reach 100 runs, pitches, 100 pitches, yeah.
Four
yeah.
runs, and then the injury thing that they have to have a mandatory IL stint with that. But it's ridiculous. I mean, we're having like an all-time high of pitcher injuries right now, and then we're going to force starters to go six innings. It's baseball is a mess right now. Yeah. Too many rule changes going on. I don't like what they're doing here.
I do want to talk about totals in the NFL for the purpose of the new kickoff rule. I don't think it's going to be that much of an impact as of like week three, because I do think teams are just going to kick it out of the end zone. They don't want the unknown. They're just going to say, we're not dealing with this. We're kicking it out of the end zone. But is there like thoughts? Is there discussions of where do we put these numbers, knowing that there could be kind of some chaotic scenes here early in the season?
There's not really going to be much adjustment going on unless we see a lot of kick returns going far and even as going as far as touchdowns returned. But without there being really known where the good field position is going to be or if it's how different it's going to be from the old rules, I think totals are going to stay put and be where they're at usually.
It might be an opportunity to attack that for betters, and I'll I'm obviously being on the other side for you, but the fact right off the bat, touchbacks going from the 25 to the 30 and sometimes even the 40, like that already kind of changes expected points from a drive. Even just 5 yards does, potentially 15 yards does. So even if they're just kicking through the end zone still, there should, in my mind, at least be a slight adjustment to you're starting at 30 instead of 25.
I mean absolutely, but it's going to be tough because, like you said, if they get that extra field position kicking out of the end zone, I don't think kickers are going to want to do that too often. They're going to want to have their special teams be able to get their guy tackled down inside the 30.
It's fascinating for sure, and it'll be certainly a development to watch, especially early in the season. Not a whole lot of teams doing a whole lot with the kickoff right now. I think they're going very vanilla. They don't want to show some of those things that they've been working on here in the offseason. Well, we're counting it down to the start of the NFL. It's always a big time around here, but we do have a preseason game coming up first, the Raiders and the Cowboys. Where are you guys at on that, and do you expect a lot of Cowboys fans coming to town to stop by and back up their team at the window?
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not sure exactly what our number is right now on that game. I don't have the paperwork right in front of me, but as far as the Cowboys coming to town, I mean, they travel as well as any other team, and unfortunately. But hopefully the Raiders fans, that they show out and don't let the Cowboys take over that stadium.
Yeah, and Raiders are a pretty significant favorite at most spots, mostly because they have said they're playing their starters into the second half. So should see a lot of good guys out there. Thanks as always. Appreciate everybody. Get down here to the TI, the Golden Circle, your spot to watch all the games, to bet on all the games. It is a sports paradise and free parking.
Chicken salad.
Don't forget. And the chicken salad. That's what Salerno says. Come back, continue things. Cofield and Company on a Friday.